This podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Welcome to RTW Rewind. Rad Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I am here with a very, very special guest. He is a member of Vince Russo's The Brand. He is also former professional wrestler, Big Vito. What's going on, brother? Good to have you here, man.
How's everything, guys? Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it. You know, Rad Rob, you know, Fabulous Rob, as we call him here down in Florida, you know, was gracious enough to have me on the show to entertain your fans, get my insight on a few subjects. You know, thank you for having me, Rob. Rob, go ahead, take it away. It's all you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And you know, you're a total pro. So obviously, you know, you're a podcaster yourself. So, you know, you're a pro like me, and you're a seasoned vet in the wrestling business. There's a lot to talk about. You know, we were talking offline about some stuff that, we'll get into some topical things. We have a mutual friend, obviously, Vince Russo.
Yes.
I've become friends with Vince. He's been on my show. You want to talk about a polarizing guy. But since you work with him directly, you know a different side of Vince Russo that not many people know. I mean, obviously, you see him on Twitter. You see him on, you hear him on his podcast. You see him on Twitch. He's a very outspoken guy. But a lot of people don't really know the real Vince. Let my listeners know in... about the real Vince. He might not want anybody to know this, but, you know, give a little insight on the real Vince Russo.
Well, I mean, I know Vince Russo since 1991, and if anybody doesn't know, I kind of broke him into business. And Vince's first wrestling gig, he was my manager.
I wasn't aware of that, actually.
Yeah, he managed Skull Von Crush. You know, I don't say how it came out. There's a tape floating around somewhere in his archives from 30 years ago. Where he hit me with a metal baseball bat. But every time I asked him, Vince, can I have a copy of the tape? No, I lost it.
Right. Yeah.
But that's somebody who's like passionate about the business, loved professional wrestling. When we started out, we did Vicious Vincent's Radio. Then we actually were working for the WWF doing the Arena Club. The Arena Club in the Nassau Coliseum, where we actually had a paying gig. And that's when I was doing TVs for WWF. Back in the 90s, before I became somebody in the business. And we were doing some great things. The Vince Russo, the person, family man, always thought about his family, a caring person, wasn't into the drinking, drugging, politics. He just wanted to do his job. He wanted to make a good product, wanted to make everything wonderful in wrestling. You know, and a lot of people crap on him and they take advantage of his kindness. But if you look at him, he's not a fighter. He's not a tough guy by any means. He doesn't want to have any confrontation. You know, it's just people, I don't know. Maybe if you're too good, you rub people the wrong way. If you're an ash, people like you. I don't know. But as far as, me and Vince go, we've been friends for 30 years, and I know that side of Vince Russo. Is he outspoken? When he's passionate about something, he is. I mean, he goes and... what he says with his heart. It doesn't say with anything else, no malice, no intentions. I mean, everybody knows about the famous Hogan spot where it came out during, the pay-per-view. I was actually in a dressing room with Hogan. I was in the dressing room first, and Hogan goes, "Hey, brother, can I share a dress?" I said, "Hulk, come on in." And me and Hulk have been friends for a long time. Mm-hmm. We're shooting the shit. We're having a good time, and I go do my match, and he comes in. He had to get ready for his, and he went out. And I was like everybody else. I said, he came back. I said, Hulk, I said, what happened? I don't know, brother. I said, what are you going to do? He says, Vito, I'm just going to go home. And I said, all right, brother. I says, I'll see you later. And I went up to Russo. And I said, Vince, what did you do? And then he gave me the skinny on what happened. And you know, and like back in the WCW days, I mean, Vince had a lot of guys who was like, you know, he's trying to implement and get the ratings up, you know, and some guys didn't like his approach on some things. He wanted to bring new talent, make new stars, make new things. And every time he had a confrontation back then, I mean, I was always around the corner, I was standing right there, and I'm like, oh, shit, man, I don't want to fight this guy, you know, because I wasn't going to let my friend get his ass kicked. And that is the whole, that is the true story. Yeah. And if anybody was going to go, and it was going to be me, and everybody knew I was always around, you know, hey, Skull, hey, Vito, man, what's up with your boy? I said, I don't know, man. I said, I'm riding the train with you. And then when, you know, things got bad for all the people who disagreed with him or weren't happy with him, you know, I took the guff of it because I was his buddy, and what better way to get at somebody than to take it out on your best buddy?
Yeah.
But you know how it is. You know, it's a wrestling business, so it comes full circle. Who cares? It's all
right. Right. Now, with that whole Hogan thing, I mean, was that a shoot?
As far as I know, like everybody else, and I'm friends with Hulk and I'm friends with Vince, that was a legit thing that happened. Whatever transpired afterwards in courts and all this other nonsense, that's their business.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
As far as that night and everything, and talk about being a polarizing figure, that was probably the most polarizing thing you could ever do to confront Hulk Hogan. And he was the man. I mean, Hulk Hogan is Hulk Hogan, NWO champion, the man, Mr. Hulkamania, WrestleMania. What can't you say about Hulk Hogan that's good? You know what I mean?
Right.
Hulk Hogan is wrestling. When you think about wrestling, you think of Hulk Hogan. And that just goes with the territory.
I mean, we probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan. I mean, you got to give Vince some credit, but you know, without a guy like Hulk to you know, put the company on his back and do whatever Vince asked him to do, I don't know if anybody else could have been as successful as him put in that position.
You know, when people talk about Hulk Hogan, you know, you think about, I personally, you know, and I hope maybe wrestling fans are out there, if you look at it the way I look at it, Hulk Hogan, he was wrestling. When you talk wrestling, it was Hulk Hogan. You know, you had the Ultimate Warrior, you had Bret Hart, you had Ric Flair. But when you said Hulk Hogan, if you were in the building during the Hogan days, now I was, and you hear the roar of the crowd when he came up, it was like nobody, you know, nobody's business. I mean, this is the man. And to get to know him as a person, he's not a racist, not a mean bone. The guy was a businessman, and he knew the wrestling business, and he politicked, okay?
Right.
Let's take that aside and throw that out for a second. But when you look at the person, you say, okay, what did he get caught up in some nonsense with a tape and saying some things? Now, you're a guy, I'm a guy. If you had a daughter and I had a daughter, you would have the same reaction probably he would, because that's normal. It's the normalcy of our society to say these things. Does it need to be on public? No. Was it anybody's business? No. Can't give the man wrong. He's just looking out for his baby. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, hey, I mean, I don't know if you have any kids.
I do.
You know?
Yeah, I have a daughter.
Okay. So if somebody came preying on your daughter and you weren't, you know, that happy with it, what are you going to do?
I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect her. Yeah.
Just like I would. You know what I mean? And I've been blessed to be around a lot of children in my life, and I protected a lot of kids, and I didn't really... If it came to that, I need to tell you, I was going to throw you off the sixth floor of a building. I was going to do it or stick your head out a window. And you know, hey, I was going to do it, but that was me. You know, everybody does their thing different. So, and to get the ramifications of everything that happened to him afterwards, to lose everything, credibility, none. You know what? I think today, in today's world, there's too much social media. Everybody knows your business. Everybody's in your business. If everybody minded their own business, maybe a lot of things wouldn't get out that don't need to be in the news. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, the coach from the WWE. Now, there are very few wrestling podcasts out there that I like, but this one I love. I love the name. I love the personalities. I love the content. Follow. Subscribe. I do. The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. That's where you're at right here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.
RTW Rewind.
Yeah, just to go back to, you know, a little bit about the wrestler Hulk Hogan. You know, when you are on his card, you're making money. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you know, say what you want about Hulk Hogan back in the day, if he was holding people down or you know, we don't have to get into all that, but a lot of people wanted to be on the card with Hulk Hogan because they knew they're going to make more money because he was the draw. You wanted to be in that A town. You didn't want to be in the B squad or the C squad. You wanted to be in that A squad with Hulk Hogan because you knew you were going to get a fantastic payday.
Remember when WWF was doing 3 house shows a day?
Yeah.
And you had the A team, the B team, and the C team?
Yep.
Well, if you were on the A team, and if you got lucky enough and you did the A and B team, you made a double payday, a double great money. And nobody could say they didn't make money back in the day because what was 100,000 back then was a million. What's 100,000 today is 10,000.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you got to pick your fight.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, it's unfortunate a lot of guys squandered some of that back in the day. But, I mean, the 80s and early 90s, man, you know, you're running hard, man. You're living life. It was a different time back then. You know, there's a lot more things were available, let's just say, you know, back in the day. And, you know, guys ran hard. Guys partied, you know, and unfortunately lost a lot of guys because of it. Do you believe the scheduling for any of the problems that we've had with wrestlers, you know, getting involved with drugs or alcohol and passing away? Or what do you think attributed to so many people that we've lost?
Well, you got to remember, I came up in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my first year in WWF was 1991. Now, I'm green, you know, but I was well-schooled and prepared to wrestle guys of that stature. So when I went to do TVs, nobody treated me like a schmuck. Mm-hmm. They treated me with respect. I was Johnny Rod's guy. And then I wrestled in the last of the territories.
Right.
So we had Santo Domingo, which not many people know it was the last of the territory. I wrestled in Puerto Rico was the last of the territory. I wrestled in Memphis, Tennessee, which was the last of the territory. And then I did the East Coast. And then when I came full circle, now, you know, I started doing ECW as far as wrestling for a major company. You know what I mean? And doing, you know, the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were there things around and around you? And to me, everybody respected my decision because I didn't want to partake. If I had a beer or I had a wine, I was good for me. You know what I mean? Because right. Like I was around growing up, Staten Island and Brooklyn. I mean, I grew up around this stuff, but I never partake. And being that I was not a party guy, but I was the guy to help you back to your room, take care of you, make sure you're okay. Guys respected that because not a lot of guys, they would just walk away and say, hey, I would have one beer, a wine, and I'll go back to my room, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was more of a choice of what you did. And guys like to be in the groups and be with the cliques. And I think it was more peer pressure. I'm not saying that nobody has a mind of their own, but when you want to be in that mix and hang with those guys, you know, you did what you needed to do. I mean, it just went hand in hand. And I think it was maybe some poor decisions, but everybody has a choice in life, guys.
No, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, a lot of the guys that were no longer part of the business had to retire due to, you know, being released or being injured. You know, a lot of them couldn't adjust to getting back to regular life. I mean, they were just used to being on the road all the time and having all these people around you and the adrenaline of being in a ring and being around fans. And unfortunately, they had to find some other way to cope with it. And it just, it's a sad part of the business, to be quite honest.
You make a great point because when I came home, I mean, I was lucky because I didn't sit home. Like when I went to Santo Domingo, went to Memphis, then I went to Puerto Rico. When I did 3 years in Puerto Rico and I came home for the first time, and it was Wednesday. Now, I was still wrestling independent. As soon as that Wednesday came, why are you putting your clothes on the floor? We have a washer dryer downstairs. Now, you're talking about I lived in a gorgeous home. I lived on Toad Hill in Staten Island, right? Yeah. A rich place. Why are your clothes on the floor? Well, I have to prepare them for when I go back, you know, to wrestling. And this is the way I usually, you know, I laid out my gear. Old school. Yep. Lay out your gear right after your bed. We have a dryer and a washer downstairs. Okay. It took me a good year to get that out of my system. It just was in me because every day with TV on Wednesdays, get ready for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was inbred in me. And that's the way I lived my life for 3 years.
Yeah.
And here I am, you know, married, I have a family, but I went home a handful of times. So that means I was working the whole time.
Right.
And then when I came home for a little bit and I was civilian life and I had to work a regular job, and I remember I was I was lucky enough to work for the phone company, pulling 600-pound cable. I'm standing there in the middle of this lot, and I'm pulling this cable. It was freezing cold. It was 20 degrees out, and I'm saying, Lord, please make my phone ring, Lord. Please, Lord, I beg you to send me back to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And I got the call. I was out of there, you know, because that's not what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be a wrestler.
And, I mean, once you officially got out of the business, was it still hard to adapt, you know, to getting back to regular life and having to go back into the workforce? Because, I mean, you know, you may have had, you know, the benefit of having jobs along the way whenever you had some downtime. But, dude, there's guys that wrestled for 20, 30, 40 years that never worked a real job in their life. And, you know, they had to figure out what was next for them. Some guys, you know, couldn't do it.
Well, here's the thing with me, you know, and this is the straight stuff, guys. You know, it's not a bullshit. When I had I had my wrestling school open in Florida, and I was did MMA training, I did boxing, I did wrestling, plus I did personal training where I would go to people's developments, and I would go to each development, drive around, go back to my school. I was living in the gym, like from 7 o'clock in the morning, doing my own press and doing my Facebook and Twitter and blah, blah, blah. Getting out 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, I'm in my own gym. I didn't get home till 9 o'clock at night. You know, right. You talk about that was a full-time job.
Yeah.
So here I am and I'm training one day and, you know, I never got majorly hurt. You know, I've gotten my clock cleaned down 10,000 times over and whatever, but you talk about like something happened that's like a freak thing, and with doing some kicks and doing some more training, I kicked through somebody and I had pad on, and I mean, man, I got a bruise. Now to me, a bruise is that I'm beat on the bra or on the skullster. I ain't nothing breaking me. I was feeling good. I was in shape, impeccable shape. I was a monster. And all of a sudden, man, this bruise ain't going down. I wonder what the hell it is. So I take my little medical kit. I try to defuse it. Comes back up. I'm saying, son of a bitch, you believe this? So I get up. I boxed 15 rounds the day before, right? Mm-hmm. I try to get up the next day, and I'm like, oh, my leg really hurts. I can't put pressure on it. I can't walk on it. I finally go to the hospital. I go to the hospital. They do a compartment test in the spot. And they said, Vito, you have to have surgery. And I said, what's talking about, man? I ain't going in there. I freaking die. And I start getting my stuff. The doctor grabbed my shoulder and said, Vito, please. He says, something bad's going to happen to you. You have to stay. I call up my buddy. I said, listen, I said, take care of my dog. I had a beautiful Rottweiler, 100 pounder, my boy. And I said, take care of my dog. He says, Vito, what's going on? He says, I got to have emergency surgery. I said, listen, you know, take care of my house. Didn't know where the keys are. Guy drove, took care of my dog. I go into surgery. I didn't call my wife. I didn't call family. I didn't call nobody. I went on a gurney. I looked at the doc. I said, doc, I said, please, I don't want to go out like this. I hugged him. I laid down and I just went like this. I woke up. I got a phone call. Where are you? Oh, I just got out of surgery. What are you talking about? What the hell? I had a blood clot on my shin.
Oh, wow.
And I was supposed to fly out that Friday to go fight. And I had a blood clot. So for 3 days, I cried because I said, how could this happen to me? I was indestructible all these years. Nothing ever broke me.
Yeah.
And I closed my school. I said, I'm going to get married. I said, hey. I said, you know all those times I said I was going to marry you? She goes, yeah. She goes, well, I said, I'm closing my school. I'm coming home. And start making arrangements. You never seen anybody make arrangements faster than my wife. Oh, right. Boy. She had a hall. She had everything. It was done. Click.
Yeah.
So you talk about change. Now, I'm changing and we're preparing for life after wrestling. I'm still wrestling. Wasn't until I got married, my wife gets sick on our wedding day.
Oh, wow.
We make it to our honeymoon, right? And then she can't walk. And I say, okay, what the hell? Bring her back home. She's in the hospital. First 3 weeks we get home. Then I had to take her to a nursing home. She had to go to the rehabilitation. So for the first 7 weeks of my marriage, I had to take care of my wife who became handicapped. I had to learn how to be a husband. And I had to learn to deactivate from wrestling because I had wrestling stuff booked. How could I leave my wife when she's in the hospital? And here's where manhood comes in. Either family first or wrestling. Before it was wrestling, then family. And I promised, I said, family first. You come before wrestling. So I was put to the test. You know the old saying, love, honor, and obey. Sickness yeah. and health. Sickness and health off the bat.
That's right.
So for the first year, I had to learn these three things, plus deal with stuff that I was dealing with. And I'm like, how do I cram all this in? And I did it. Most everybody in the book, that if this was Vegas, it was like if you bet 100, you're going to make 500. I was bolting and I was out of there. I was the biggest bachelor in town. I was not staying for this.
Yeah.
Stayed by her side. So you talk about learn how to change. Lord gives you things he knows you can handle.
That's right.
So that's the story how I changed. And, you know, one thing led to another. And, you know, I just said, you know, wrestling, family first. You know what I mean? So my wife still needs me today. You know, if I had to push the envelope, and this is really, if I had to push it, maybe I could wrestle if I put myself through in that position. But what if something happens to me and I have to deal with other things? So
yeah, it's true. It's good that you have your priorities straight because, you know, not a lot of guys do. And obviously your wife is fantastic. Nobody has a bad thing to say about her at all. You know, she's been very gracious in my dealings with her and, you know, talking to Vince and guys that know you, like, you know, nobody has a crossword to say about her. So you made the right decision, brother, for sure.
No, I try to make the right decisions, you know, even though she gives me a hard time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now I got to remember who the pimp daddy is. I'm the B-I-G-V from the L-O-G.
I love it. I love that you're still, you're still part, you know, living the gimmick a little bit. You know what I mean? You have to.
Hey, listen, you know, my wife laughs at me and she says, "Are you still a princess? I went to the salon. I get my nails done. My teeth are white. Your skin is good. You give yourself facials. You keep looking good." But my wife's a beautiful woman. I got to keep my pimp on, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
And I look like I'm 35 years old. And I still look handsome. You know, ladies at the pool adore me. You know what I mean? So just in case, for all you guys out there, if you don't know, keep in shape. Keep your peep on. Because you know what? If your wife leaves you, you don't have to go through the ritual of getting back in shape. I got to get there. You're already in shape. Your math is there.
Smart guy, man. You're a smart guy. You look fantastic. I mean, you could get back in the ring today if you you got conditioned and because there's a difference between being in shape, as you know, and being in ring shape.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Right.
And getting used to bumping again and running the ropes and getting calloused up and all that. So,
guys, if you know when you're out of the business and you're out of the ring, I keep in shape and I work out and I do my thing. Right, I look good. If I had to go back to wrestling, I would say, hold it. I said, we're talking Vito. And everybody knows I am a perfectionist. I am crisp. I am. And if I can't be Vito, I don't want to be.
Yeah.
I said, listen, I need to go to your developmental wrestling school for a good month. Let me prepare for this. I'll do vignettes every week. And then I will train 5 days a week in the gym and grind and get myself in wrestling shape. They said, a month. It doesn't take a week, guys. It doesn't take a day. You have to be cardiovascular, fast, bumpy. Remember, it's 3 minutes on TV. Everybody thinks you have a half hour. You got to shake your ass and know exactly what you're going to do in those 3 minutes to make it look good.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. And, you know, Triple H even said the hardest thing he's ever done in his career is wrestle once a year. Yeah, because he has to go through and get used to that bumping again and training again and getting his cardio back again. He's, you know, he said in all the things he's been through in his career, doing, you know, WrestleMania once a year is the toughest thing he's ever done. I mean, and you just proved, you know, you just said it right there.
It's the truth, because you know what? Your body's not in condition to fall anymore. Like if I fell, I could break my fall. But you talk about falling and then getting back up. Now, I could do it with the best of them. I could bump and feed. And I always said, keep 30 seconds in your tank for the baby face when he makes his comeback, because that's the most important time of your match. You got to be able to hustle. Yeah. And if you can't get up, there's the match right there.
Yep.
You know, and then if you got 20 minutes, how are you pacing yourself for 20 minutes? I mean, it's a craft. You know how to do it, but it's a rhythm.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it 5 nights a week, you are in wrestling shape. You're in the best shape of your life. Go wrestle in Japan for a month. You see, nobody could touch you.
Right.
Nobody touches you. You know what I mean? Let alone if you're that guy when you're here in the States. Hey, Vito, you want to go to Japan for come back. You're a monster. You don't blow up. You don't get touched.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? No way.
That's awesome.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Vampiro. This right here is the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Tune in, get tuned up, get informed, and enjoy the podcast.
RTW Rewind.
Let's touch a little bit on some of the places that you worked over the years. Okay. You know, we were talking about Jim Cornette before we started. Did you have the chance to work in any of his territories or work with him wherever he was?
You know, guys, I never worked for Jim Cornette, but you talk about some of the great things he's done in the business. Great manager. And I'll give it to him, man. Knowledge of the wrestling business. You give it to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
His place in wrestling, he does have a place. His presentation of what he thinks sometimes it doesn't come off politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem that we all have with Jim Cornette, is that his presentation is not politically correct.
You know, I had Tracy Smothers on a little while ago, and he worked directly with him. And, you know, he told stories of about Jim being just as crazy behind the scenes as he is, you know, in public. He said if Jim was 7 feet tall and 300 pounds, he'd kill 100 people, because that's just the way he is.
But you know what? You know what's sad is that when people have all this knowledge, right, and you and your perception, and you want to talk to, there's a certain way you have to speak to people.
Right.
And just like I'm speaking to you now, and I'm saying I wouldn't be able to speak like I am 30 years ago. My interview with you and the way I present myself would be totally different. But you're groomed to speak a certain way when you're doing these things. And I say politically correct, or maybe Jim doesn't come across politely.
Right.
And things he has on his mind, he says that comes out of his mouth. Now, granted, when you get in a rant and you have a reason to rant and you say things, and I've done it, you know, but I don't do it every day. When it needs to be said, I do it. You know what I mean? But we talk about every day, and you're constantly at the grind, and you want people to follow your lead, but there's a different way for them to follow your lead, you know? Mm-hmm. And for the greatest mind as he has in a business, and from just like when he, MLW, he was a commentator, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And then he said something that was a joke. A joke.
Oh, NWA Power, I think.
I'm sorry, MLW. It was NWA Power. I know it was one of the good indie feds, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, he said something that was a joke that was misconstrued, and he lost his job. Today, you have to be politically correct in how you present these ideas because of social media. So he lost his job. Then he goes on his own. And I say this all the time. You've heard me say this. Everybody said, you know, when it comes to Vince Russo, everybody on that podcast, whether it's Cornette, it's Pritchard, it's Eric Bischoff, you know, these four guys, you know, they talk about 20 years ago. How long can you talk about 20 years ago? You know, and you want to talk about all the stuff. You know, and I'm going to say it like this. Who gives a shit? It's 20 years ago. But if you go back and watch the stuff from 20, when you go back and watch wrestling, what do you watch? You watch WCW stuff, 605, the Power Hour.
Yep.
That's what you're watching. That was the best wrestling. They had the best talent. And that's when they had great talent before I got there. When I got there, they could stack up against anybody talent wise. And if you're trying to get all that talent on a card, and then Vince is trying to get all the talent to be incorporated in the show, it can't be a one guy show. It can't be a two guy show. It has to be all the way through.
Yep.
A lot of guys didn't like that. You know, but Scott Hall always made a point of saying something. And this is what I was having a conversation with DDP one day. And we were talking. He said, Scott Hall made a good point. He says, if we don't make guys for us to play with, there's nobody to play with. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'll give you a perfect point. You know, I have been tag team champion. I think I was hardcore champion. I don't remember right exactly. I had to wrestle Scott Steiner before a pay-per-view. He's wrestling Booker for the title. I was a named guy in on the card. I was on one of the top guys, right? So here I am. I'm wrestling Steiner. He gave me everything under the sun that you could take. But here I came back, and I gave him everything back, right? There's a hell, and people were like, oh, my God, Vito, oh, my God. And then when I came back, place went crazy. They thought I was going to get him. Stevie Ray was probably one of the best announcers, and everybody just come on, Big Vito, and everybody was like, said Vito suplex, Vito did this, yeah, and you know, you know, I went to the well too many times, but he caught me after I took his onslaught before a pay per view against Booker. I go back to the thing, so I go to Terry Tyson. I said, "How was that?" He said, "That was great for you. Wasn't great for Steiner, but you took everything under the sun." But the whole thing is to make somebody look like somebody so you beat somebody. And I never forgot that. And if you remember my title run, I'll give you a perfect example, people. David Flair was not ever the most vicious guy or never ever the most violent guy you ever seen. And I wrestled David and I was hardcore champion. I said, David, I says, you're going to be vicious today. He says, what do you mean, Vito? Now, remember, he's green. But yeah. Arn Anderson and Rick trusted me with him, and I always took care of him, right? I said, tonight, you're going to shock the world. He goes, what? He says, you're going to kick the shit out of me from the back all the way to the front. There he comes, and he is kicking the shit out of me, and everybody in the back is like, oh, my God. David, what the hell? And then when he ran out of things to do, I cut him off. And that's what a good bet does. He cuts you off at that time.
Yeah.
We finished the match, you know what I mean? But for those few minutes, he was rocking me. He had me.
Yeah.
But that's a pro. When you could take somebody, make them look on your level, or even a step above, but then when you come above it, you beat somebody.
No, you're exactly right. And you know, you made him look like $1 million. And you didn't have to. Now, was Terry pissed off because he expected you to just be involved in a squash? Like he wanted Steiner to just roll over you because he was, you know, the champ or he was going for the title? Like what would Terry's mindset be for being upset with what you did?
Who knows? Everybody had nothing against Terry Taylor, nothing against nobody, but everybody had an agenda. The place was going in 20,000 different directions back then.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too. So, I mean.
And guys, let me tell you something. Working at WCW is probably one of the best jobs I had. Everybody was happy. We played cards back then. Everybody got their card game on. The best thing was that then when I had Sting, Goldberg, Scott Steiner, and myself were playing cards. And I would set the guys on purpose. You never seen guys get me. Sting would have the best time laughing. Steiner would throw it up. Man, I ain't gonna do it. You know I was gonna make it. And you set me. Goldberg, man. The other stuff. And people would come around. Kevin Nash, he would laugh because I was pissing people off. Man, what do you think about that? You know, and I would throw it down.
You let that Staten Island out, didn't you?
Yeah, I threw it on there.
Yeah.
I said, you see my jewelry, fellas? Who I laid it down? You know? But the camaraderie when we were playing cards and we were wrestling together, we were like a little family.
Right.
But the chaos between who was in charge, Terry Taylor, to Kevin Sullivan, to Vince Russo, to Eric Bischoff, to Vince Russo, back to Terry Taylor, to John Laurinaitis. It was a circus. And if everybody would have just settled on one thing, let Vince do his thing. He had 3.5 on the ratings. he brought it up from the 2.2. You're not going to make $7 million. You got 3.5. You're competing with the WWE. Would anybody take 3.5 today?
Oh, hell yeah, they would. Bet your ass they would.
I mean, yeah. 3.5, that's an all-time high right now. I mean, WWE, when you look at their ratings, their Monday Night Raw and their SmackDown, they're lucky they're cracking 2 million.
Yep.
They're just under, I think they're at 1.8. I'm not a statistician, guys. I think 1.8, 1.7.
I think Raw's hanging around, yeah, that. And I think SmackDown is still hovering around 2. But still, you know, Impact, TNA was doing that, you know, 10 right. years ago.
And then you look at their NXT and you look at AEW, right?
Yeah. Both of them combined don't equal what Raw and SmackDown does.
Combined. So you talk about if you had one show on a Wednesday, there would be 1.5 million people watching.
Yeah.
My estimation, like I said, I'm not an analytics guy, but I'm just giving you my perception.
Right.
But because everybody, we need an alternative. And if Vince, Mr. McMahon, wasn't as competitive as he is, left AEW to be their own brand, they would be over a million. So there would be an alternative where, you know, but it's a competition. It's a business thing. Now, if everybody didn't split it across the board, whether it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I think there's no wrestling on Thursday and Friday, right? You split that up, that's splitting up the pie pretty thin. And we're on a thin basis as it is.
Yep.
And this is with no competition, people. What happens when baseball comes back? Basketball comes back?
Yeah.
Football's around the corner. What do you do then? Where is the competition? How low will the ratings go? On a Monday Night Football game, if Raw is on and Monday Night Football, you think maybe Raw will hit a million?
I mean, especially with the time that we're in now. I mean, with people, you know, not enjoying the product as much as they used to.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough time. And, you know, people can say all they want about ratings. You know, we watch things differently now. We have streaming. We have YouTube. We have all that. But still, when you combine all that together, all the different platforms you could typically watch on something, that still doesn't equal to what people consider the worst days of WCW, you know, in 2000, 2001. They were doing higher ratings than what, you know, Vince is doing right now. It's where did those people go? I ask this question to guys that have been in the business all the time. What do you think happened to those fans that were watching during the Monday Night Wars and all that, and, you know, 6-7 million people? Where did those people go once WCW went out? Obviously, they didn't go to the WWE.
Well, when you look at wrestlers today and you look at wrestlers yesterday, and this is not disrespecting anybody, this is just how times have changed, guys. But when you look at the wrestlers from when I wrestled, and you look like men to where everybody's a young kid and you see kids wrestling. Now, everybody wants to look at a hot chick, and all the divas are beautiful in their own way. And this is not me being a jerk or saying, oh, I'm loving it. No, I mean, you want to see pretty girls. You want to see wrestlers. You want to see – there's all different looks. You know what I mean? You have some MMA fighters who made the transition, you know, and they have their own certain beauty. It appeals to some people. But not everybody can be, you know, glamour beautiful. But everybody's beautiful in that category where they come out and they shine and they have a certain look. So far as, like, you look at let's look at AEW. Like, here's a good example. You have Chris Jericho is the guy. He's the man, right?
And he should be, too.
He's
earned it. Yeah.
He's earned it. You have Moxley, who came in after him as a name. Now, when you go to who are the real stars, talk about A player, and this is not disrespecting anybody. This is just the way it's looked at, right? Cody Rhodes never attained that star in WWE, so it came in a notch below.
Right.
Jack Swagger, he attained being a world champion, but he lost a little flavor once he had some nonsense with The Office, but it didn't squash his demeanor as We the People. He still is over, right? And then he came in. Probably the most over guy they have doesn't wrestle, and that's Billy Gunn. And he is a monster. He's 6'5".
Yeah.
He looks good. He could still work. If they put him in the position to be heavyweight champion, he could be the heavyweight champion just on appearance and look. If you made him a heel, he'd be on the Brock Lesnar A platform, right? But he's too big for him to play with all these guys. There's nobody there has a size.
Yeah.
You look at Sammy Guevara, right? He hangs with Jericho. Now, Jericho has played with a bunch of different guys to try to give him the rub, right, in championship matches and put them in different positions, right?
Right.
Make the people, hey, that guy's hanging with them. Have certain guys taken advantage of the fact that I am going to beat the living shit out of Chris Jericho? Or when they had a match with Moxley, and this is some guys who wrestled them, they didn't take advantage because they have that indie mentality to do some stupid things instead of beating the living shit out of them. If you get that chance, you go full bore because you want to not to do your gimmick or not to walk around the ring. This is I got to beat the hell out of you and inflict pain on you.
Yeah.
No, a lot of guys don't get that, right?
Right.
So when you talk about like guys who could be over at AEW, Billy Gunn, if I had to put the title on the next guy, I'll put it on Billy Gunn. Cody Rhodes, no matter how much he climbs the ladder, right, he could be on a smaller scale promotion. He could be the top guy. But as you saw in the big scene, they gave him 5 or 6 chances to be a top guy. He didn't cut it. So on a smaller scale, he's a top guy, like a lot of guys. This is not a knock against anybody. This is just wrestling 101. But the guy they have sitting in the back, he could be the man and run with it. And who wouldn't want to listen to his promo, you know, and who wouldn't want to listen to what he's got to say? And if he got a sidekick like his son to be Road Dog and say the other part of it, hey, I'm not a booker, but hey, this is wrestling 101.
Right.
You heard it here first. On fabulous Rad Rob's.
I mean, what do you think of guys that brought in like Lance Archer? I mean, who's got some size and now, I mean, he could be the guy, right?
Now, Lance Archer, I was just going to say, Lance Archer has been a hidden gem. For whatever reason, he's been sitting in Japan and he's been a big star in Japan. Now, WWE wasn't interested for some reason or they didn't come together, right? It wasn't their cup of tea, but him coming over now with Jake the Snake. And here's what WWE missed the boat. You had so many stars and so many guys that you could have put with guys to make new stars. He's with Jake the Snake Roberts. He's getting the huge rub, right? Yeah. You had Arn Anderson going with Cody to give him the rub. You know what I mean? Who else did that? You got DDP who came back. He really didn't manage or hang with nobody yet. Teach him the diamond cutter. Say, hey, kid, you know, I'm getting up there. Maybe it's time for you to use the, you know, the diamond cutter.
Yeah.
There's a possibility. But in WWE, look at all the greats they got there. You know what I mean? That guys, they could be, you know, when my wife and I were talking about this the other day, there was a, when the documentary came out about the Road Warriors, right?
Yep.
And you had Paul Ellering. And you say, Paul Ellering was in NXT with that tag team. What was the name of the tag team he was
managing? The Authors of Pain, AOP.
Okay. He brought those guys in. Everybody knew, okay, it's the new, it gave them credibility.
Yeah.
Could they work like Legion of Doom? No. Were they different? Yes. Could they have been groomed and worked with to be monsters? Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you take away Paul Ellering, you took away their value.
Yeah.
That was this.
And they were still green when they got brought up too, you know?
They were, but they were a work in progress.
Yeah.
Right? You talk about great man. You look at Ric Flair, right? He came and he gave the rub to his daughter, right? And then she took off. But she needed that time with the father to this is Ric Flair's kid. She has made a name for herself. She's 12-time champion. She might break the all-time record. She's on her way, right? So when have you seen another superstar of that caliber come along and give somebody the rub?
We probably haven't seen it since, you know, Brock Lesnar. I mean, the original Brock Lesnar, when Paul Lee first hooked up with him and he was the next big thing. I mean, that's the last major star I could think of that was made by somebody like like Paul, you know, and obviously we've seen him later, but, you know, Brock had been established by then.
RTW Rewind.
The art of managing itself is a lost art. We're seeing some of it come back now in WWE with, you know, people like Zelina Vega, you know, with Sami Zayn had his own stable for a while, but, you know, managers played a huge role back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, especially guys like, well, just like Paulie or Jim Cornette or, you know, Bobby Heenan, guys that knew how to get heat.
You're
you
right.
Don't see that. You don't see that anymore.
And Bobby Heenan was a great bump taker.
I've heard he was one of the best. I heard he was an underrated wrestler that never got credit for being as good as he was.
Guys, when you talk about you picking your spot, you know, I'm from the old school, right? My wife managed me, and she was on the indies, right? And I said, okay, this is the way we're going to do it. This is the way the pros do it. Yeah, but I was used to do this. And I says, listen, managers have one spot. Either it's to take a bump or to get back, right?
Yeah.
So if you're a manager and you're standing there, just like I did with Nunzio, right? When I was with Nunzio, I had one stand. I stood there, didn't make a move. Soon as I got that chance, bang, went back to my pose. Nunzio was helped go on to victory, right?
Yeah.
When it was time for me to bump, get up there, fly off the canvas, do whatever. If the pace goes nuts, right?
Yep.
You try to scurry back in, skin the cat, and you just miss helping Nunzio win. That's what's missed today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Having that one spot for the manager. Managers today, they want to do all this stuff. The spot is not for you. It's the wrestler. And, you know, like I think it was Zelina Vega who came on and she said she revolutionized the manager's role on a tweet. It's better to be spoken about by Meltzer or OneWrestling.com or the Wrestling Observer that you did revolutionize. Right? When you're there for a cup of coffee, you just got your mug. You know, not to say you're not doing a bad job or a good job. You just got the cup. You're there for a cup of coffee or a sip. And you revolutionized the business. If you're there 5 years, then I could say, hey, you revolutionized the business in a couple months.
Right. Now, do you think she's just tweeting just to get heat? You know, just to be a smart ass heel?
But when you look at it, right, you're not talking about you as a manager. You're supposed to be promoting your protege, how
True.
Great of a champion he is,
True.
how you're doing this stuff. It's not about you. It's about the person. Paul Heyman is a perfect example. Does Paul Heyman talk about ECW in any of his promos?
Nope.
Nope. Who does he talk about? Brock Lesnar. His focus is on Brock Lesnar, and this is what the boat is missed on because nobody looks at actually what he does. He speaks of Brock Lesnar. He promotes Brock Lesnar. That's who pays his paycheck, Brock Lesnar. Everything is Brock Lesnar.
That's
and
true.
These guys are coming up. I revolutionized the business. You make a joke of it. No, you haven't. You just got there. You're a nice looking woman. You're a cool looking chick. But really, what have you done? Have you been? You know, how many champions do you have in your stable?
Now I think she's got potential. I mean, I like her. I listen to her commentary. She can work and she can talk. And I think there is potential there for her. But you know what we've seen from you know Vince McMahon nowadays, he doesn't let anybody get bigger than the brand. You know, WWE is the brand. WrestleMania it sells tickets. It's not about Roman Reigns. It's not about Brock Lesnar. It's not about Seth Rollins. You know, it's about the brand. When did that happen? You know what I mean? Like, you know, you had Hulk Hogan back in the day, right? After Hulk Hogan, you had, let's just say, Stone Cold. You had The Rock. You had The Undertaker. After that, you had John Cena. Roman Reigns has kind of gotten to that level, but to me, I think John Cena is the last of a dying breed, and I don't think you'll ever see a company guy like that ever again with that kind of work ethic that they're going to push to that level. Where did Vince... I mean, I obviously you're going to speculate because, you know, you're not there right now, but... Why do you think Vince McMahon wants WWE to be bigger than the actual stars that he has worked for?
I'll give you the answer. Developmental was started because Vince was rethreading all the guys from WCW back in 2000 when he bought WCW. Who was he bringing in? WCW guys. Developmental was established to make new stars, okay? So you had developmental territory, started with FCW, that went to Deep South, to went to Louisville, Kentucky, yep. Right?
Yep.
And then you brought it to NXT, right? He got tired of using other people, wanted to make his own stars, which he did. The stable of Cena and Batista and Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar will never be reproduced. And you throw in Shelton Benjamin
right.
as the fifth guy, that stable will never be reproduced. Now, after they got bigger than what the company was, he says, hey, then they started the power play game. Well, I don't think this, I don't think that, I'm going to go, I'm going to do this. And that. And they don't like the power struggle, and they don't like that. So they pull you back. What is the old school mentality when you leave Vince? All right, you're going to leave me. Vince will take you back. But yeah. you're going to pay the price for leaving me.
right.
I'll give you the contract. I'm going to pay you, but I'm going to make you dance like a monkey and make you look the fool. What did he do to Kurt Angle when he came back?
Sure. Right? That's true.
All right. On his inductee of the Hall of Fame, right? Now you're talking, it's the most prestigious thing in the world, okay? But you're talking about an Olympic gold medalist. You're talking about a multi-world champion.
And legit badass.
And a badass, right? And you want to spread milk at the end? Thank you very much. That was the only thing I took from this. Like, you made him, you prestiged him, you gave him the moment, but then you shit on him at the end.
Yeah.
I thought that was a slap in the face, my opinion. Before he retired, what was he doing? He was jobbing to all these guys.
Right.
And I used to get mad because I'd say, okay, he's not beating these guys. He shouldn't be in the ring. But to lay down for some of these guys was like, I was like, but that was Vince's revenge for him leaving and doing the stuff. He did the same thing to Mr. Perfect. He did the same thing to Ric Flair. He did the same thing to everybody.
He did to Hogan too.
Yeah, he did it to Hogan. You could fire Stone Cold Steve Austin. You could fire Kurt Angle. You could fire Brock Lesnar. He'll fire you, but he'll bring you back. Yeah, he's going to use you. He's going to do it to you. So, I mean, now you look at it, how many A players are in the game? I consider the WWE to have one A player, Brock Lesnar.
Right.
Everybody else has been so scaled down that B and C players. Now, this brings us up to a great point. We were talking before the show. I have been on Nia Jax for the last month. She was off TV. She got hurt. They bring her back. They give her a beautiful entrance. They gave her a couple squash matches. They did everything, right?
Yep.
What does she go and do? TikTok. She's dancing. Right? You're supposed to be this monster here where you're killing people. You change your Facebook to label, you know, that you're a killer and you are dangerous.
Yeah.
So why aren't you TikTok and breaking things, using a sledgehammer, cracking glass, doing? Instead, you're making a fool of yourself and you're making a fool of the business. And there's this kayfabe, people believe I'm the indestructible force. I will come out there. And what they do at Money in the Bank, they had you do a comedy spot where you squash Rey Mysterio with Otis while he's eating a sandwich and you're standing there. And then you're drooling on the carpet. That's not what they had intended for you. They wanted to push you as a monster, but you instead were doing TikTok and dancing unprotected during coronavirus in the state of Florida. So yeah. Who's the fool?
Right. No, you're absolutely right. Do you think social media has hurt a lot of the contractors?
150%, because there is no kayfabe no more. And
right.
If you don't kayfabe, nobody's going to believe. Now, Vito LaGrasso was going to come back, and I would come back as Skull Von Crush. Mean, nasty, arrogant, kick everybody's ass in the building. They're 15,000. I'm going to kick 15,001 asses, and I'm going to make change. Mean, nasty, just be ruthless. You think I'm going to go on TikTok? You think I'm going to do every promo? I'm being nasty. I don't like you people. My next opponent, I'm going to destroy you. I'm the baddest man on the planet. I would do stuff where I would be calling out Tyson and everybody else. And then if I'm wrestling on TV, what am I going to be? Ruthless and nasty, where I'm just digging at you, where the referee's got to pull. And another thing I hate, when people make the turn around, and then how about backing up, keeping your eye on your opponent, and then going in and bang.
Yeah, I mean, don't ever take your eye off your opponent.
Right? Everybody does it, and they go do this stupid stuff that they do on the indies. This is primetime TV. We don't want to see you do that. We want to see you be that ruthless killer.
Right.
There's nobody there. John Moxley does it. He doesn't play around. He's got his thing going, right?
Yep.
Jack Swagger, right? He can be there, but he lost to Moxley and Moxley beat him at wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, because it became a wrestling match.
Yep.
And Jack Swagger is supposed to be an MMA fighter. So where did that put him now?
Yeah, I didn't agree with the booking of that. They could have had a Shmaz or something to not have him lose clean like that.
RTW Rewind.
Yeah, I've mentioned that on my show a few times, where as many positive things that AEW does, they're just, you know, it's like two steps forward, you know, one step back. They're never been consistent enough. You know, their booking is all over the place. What do you attribute that to? Do you think it's because they don't have one guy that's in charge, like a Vince McMahon, to run their stuff through?
Guys.
Because you have the boys booking the territory?
I'm going to say this, and I've said this for a long time, right? When the boys are in charge and they made a big point of that, we don't need a booker. We don't need this. We don't need that. We don't need the other thing, right?
Right.
So you say, all right, you don't need this and that. All right, then how do you as an agent – now, if I was an agent at AEW – and you are on the committee, the booking committee, how can I come and tell you, listen, you need to do this, this, this. Well, I'm the booker. And if you don't like it my way, don't like it. So my job as an agent is null and void. Now, if Cody and Mr. Khan are writing, which they do try. I mean, I'm not knocking them. But Tony Khan needs an experienced guy who's not a wrestler to help him write the show. You can't have the boys booking the show, because that's what killed WCW, because when the boys got there and they were writing their own stuff, it didn't work. It closed down. When you are the boys, what angle are you going to put yourself in? You know what I mean? How high on the card are you going to go?
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes made a thing. I'm not fighting for the championship. I will never do this. You did this whole thing. We took the lashes and, you know, did all this. Was it necessary? I don't know what point you were trying to get across, that you're tough. I don't know. If anybody remembers when they were trying to make Randy Orton tough, he had a match with a man named Cactus Jack.
Yep.
Where did Randy Orton land? Right in the thumbtacks. And he was a young, good-looking kid, and they were trying to bring him along, and Ric Flair was his manager. And I don't know. You remember this, guys. When he dove in those thumbtacks, I never did the thumbtacks. I didn't need to do that to get over. But let me tell you something. If you got to pick thumbtacks on you and you got to have in your body and scar and do all this stuff, doing the lashes, you know, so you could, you know, a one-off or a two-off or three-off. Okay, now where do you go? Now he's back in the championship. Does he win the title? Does he make himself champion? Or do you put it on the other guy?
It's a hard thing to do when you put yourself in that position and you tell the public, hey, we are the vice president, you know, the elite run this company. And you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If they were to put themselves on that top level, they would have said, oh, Jesus Christ, it's just the boys booking themselves on top. But they've gone, you know, excessively out of their way to not put themselves over. Well, therein lies the problem. You have Kenny Omega, one of the greatest wrestlers in the world, which, you know, a lot of his peers say, and a lot of the fans say, and he's losing to everybody because he's one of the guys in charge, and he doesn't want people to think that he's going to book himself into that main event level.
But Kenny Omega is a great wrestler. He's a great Japanese wrestler. I watched this Japanese stuff. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But he comes across in the U.S. as very vanilla. Blah. Doesn't have, when he tries to fire up, you could see it's just, I'm not digging it.
Yeah. No, I get it.
You know what I mean? It just doesn't grab you. And when the people were in the stand, he was trying too hard. Too hard. Instead of letting his ability, you know, take over. He's very vanilla. The Young Bucks, I'm glad they didn't come in as champions. They've been doing the job and putting other guys over, But as soon as a year goes out, them guys are going to put the stamp of approval on themselves. They're going to be champions. They're not the biggest guys. They're smaller guys. Where would the young Bucks be if they signed into WWE?
Oh, they'd be mid-carders, or they might be the top guys off the bat, but eventually they're going to lose their push, and they're just going to be they're going to lose their push and be jobbing every week.
They're smaller than the Usos.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and this is not a disrespect to them, I think they do some great stuff. Said if I had that kind of flippability,
I could never do anything like that. But yeah, right.
Yeah, but when you talk about it, they do some good stuff.
Yeah. Right?
But if they brought them to the dance, okay, where did they go with the machine gun guys we talked about? And where did they go with some of the bigger tag teams?
Right.
The two small guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they're more on the cruiserweight level than the heavyweight level, you know? And I know the Usos are not big guys either, but they have some size to them. You know, where did they go with New Day? I think they're smaller than New Day.
Yep, they are.
You know, and I know there's a couple other tag teams out there that are smaller. I think the most wasted talent they got there is Ricochet, and that's Cedric Alexander. Would you go to 205 already and go be a cruiserweight champion? Ricochet, you're not believable. You do all these running flips, flip, 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 flip. All right, you're not believable. And when they did that thing with you and Brock Lesnar, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, that's why he got squashed. You know what I mean?
Squashed, but he never – he was in NXT. Yeah, and you know what, guys? Some guys, they belong in NXT because that's where their most of their popularity is. Ricochet should never have lost. There's never left their NXT. You really want to push the envelope, and this is not saying anything bad, but if you put Kevin Owens back in NXT, I bet you they draw 15,000 again.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and I've used Ricochet, poor guy, as an example on this show of guys that are fantastic athletes, right? Can do tremendous things in the ring, but you get him on a microphone and it's crickets. He doesn't have a believable character. He doesn't show. I want him to have some passion. He's a nice guy. We all get that, right? But he doesn't have any swag. He doesn't show any fire. Like, just fire up. That's all I want to see out of him. I want to see some emotion out of him. And when he gets on the mic, it's over, brother. Like that. He's never going to get pushed. Because he doesn't have a compelling enough character. He doesn't elicit enough emotions out of people to get you to care about him. In a day and age where anybody can have a 5-star match and everyone are fantastic athletes, there's so many cookie cutter guys nowadays. Give me something else. Give me an added layer to what I know about Ricochet. I want to know more about him, but I just want him to show some passion and fire, and I just don't see it out of him. And he's never going to be that main event guy.
You know, you mentioned a good word, swag. Right, and I use that word all the time. If you look at Skull Von Crush or Vito La Skull LaGrasso from ECW, I am oozing swag.
Yeah,
I had those people up on their seats. Now, I wasn't a main event guy. I wasn't on the top tier. But you put me in there with them guys, and then people got up off their seats, and I had swag. I had confidence. I had everything going for me, right? I'd spit in your face. I didn't care. I would kick your ass.
Yeah,
and then here you have the matches, and you're doing the things, you know, with the people. People buy it.
Yeah,
they buy it. They like that. You know, Skull Von Crush, it had its own cult following. It still has a cult following. That's why I said, you know what? If I ever did anything, I'd come back as Skull. I really would. I have the leather jacket. I got the towel. I still have the beret. I have the ECW garb. So what's to say? Hey, let me put it on. I still look the same.
All right.
Right. Maybe I'm not, body wise, I'm not as big as I was, you know, but in shape. And if I say, I'll drop another, I tell my wife, I says, you know, I said, babe, I'm almost cut up. You know, nothing. You don't need to lose any more weight. We have this weight loss contest in the house, right?
Yeah.
So, but you talk about things. And I said, if I finally tune this machine, you're a spray tan away from going on TV. Now, like the way I look, I was like, what the fuck? I still look the same. If I put this stuff on and took a picture, you would say, you look at my face now, you look at then, I look better now than I did then.
Right.
It's the truth. True. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Go back and look at old Skull pictures, look at my face now. You'd be like, all right, Vito, what's your magic?
Yeah,
Avon.
But yeah, you know, it's like, we need more believable people nowadays in wrestling. You know, when the days of Brock Lesnar, when the guys like Brock Lesnar are gone, you know, even Roman Reigns is a big, tough guy, has a great look. You know what I mean? Like, they could push him to the moon if they really want to. But when you get guys like that are gone, and no offense to them, but, you know, Ricochet, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, you know, Finn Balor. Do you see those guys leading a company like a Hulk Hogan or a Rock or a John Cena?
Now, here's another thing, guys, what people don't understand, right? Seth Rollins, bring this up. Seth Rollins is a good – there are guys who could be singles, and there are guys who are group players. Seth Rollins is a group player because when he had Stephanie and Triple H and he was their boy, when he was with the Shield as a singles,
yeah,
no flavor. No, right. No, right? Kevin Owens, right? When he was with Jericho, that was his best work.
Yep.
He is a partner. When he did his thing with Sami Zayn, it was good enough to keep you interested.
And no offense to him. He's a fantastic kid. No. Like, he's a great worker.
No.
And he's got a great mind. But, yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
You can keep a Kevin Owens on the NXT as that single guy. But when you bring him up, he needs that – I thought the greatest thing he was doing, and I thought it was genius, but they killed it, is when he joined the New Day.
Yeah, I agree.
I was like, all right, I dig it.
Yeah.
And he's doing the New Day stuff, and he's having a good time, and people were into it. And then soon as something gets over, there's another kid out there, a guy named Elias, who's sitting there blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
And they pushed him. When he had those matches with Cena, they were ready to – and he pulled them back. They pushed him, they pull him back. And then they made a fool of him. And once you lose your gimmick, which means you lose your guitar and somebody hits you with it, you're finished, guys. Right. Once they take your gimmick, you're done.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Are you afraid that guys like Elias is too much of a gimmick?
But there's a guy who's got the body. He's got the look. He's got a gimmick. What's too much? What is too much? Did he – okay.
No, I get it. No, you're right.
Now, in order to be a great babyface, you got to be a great heel.
That's true.
Big Vito from WCW is a good. Somebody just posted a match on my Facebook. Right, it was me and the Artist. I don't know if you're on my Facebook or not, but
yeah.
Okay, if you go back, you'll see it right there. The match is me and the Artist. This is the day after I lost the Hardcore title. I walk out there, and the people are on their feet, the whole arena chanting my name. All I did was walk out. They appreciated my hard work, and here it is. And I remember, like yesterday, the boys in the back, when I came back, what the hell was that? All I did was walk out there. But when you look at me, I was a made guy, and I look like a super. I said this to myself, I look like a superstar because I took my hat off. I looked at the people. Put it down, right to business, being a tough guy. But the way they applauded me and cheered my name the whole time, after you get off this and you're done, go listen to the announcers and listen to the crowd. You don't have that no more.
Right.
There isn't a jam-packed arena chanting anybody's name anymore.
And you'd I mean, the crowd just wants to be part of the show themselves.
But me, that's just with me going around. Thank you. I appreciate it. Day after I lost the title, I'm taking my jacket off, and I hadn't even take a look. I was like, they appreciate me.
Yeah.
I was a badass. I came out, kick your ass.
Yeah, you were.
Norman Smiley, you know, Ralphus, the whole crew. I'm doing hardcore 5 nights a week. My body was beat up.
Yeah, I bet.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
But I went there every night and just did it. The thing with Ralphus was, you know, if anybody remembers me wrestling with Ralphus and Norman, Ralphus, we had the can cover, right? So logically, you say hit him with the flat end of the cover. Ralphus is a wrestler, takes the handle part, cracks me across the head.
Hmm.
You see me like I was like, so here he comes again. I said, this ain't happening again. As he was coming again, I punched him square in the face through the pan where I actually hit him. I cut my hand open. That's how hard I hit him.
Yeah.
Because he hit me and I thought I split my whole head open. I was like, holy shit, that hurt. So anybody thinks wrestling is fake, just go to your local trash can cover, look at the handle, and just do this. You say, man, that's pretty solid. How about taking a full blast from somebody who don't know what the hell they're doing?
Yeah, a truck driver that wanted to be a wrestler, right? Yeah. But I mean, he was over, dude. I mean, like,
yeah, he was over.
A guy like that, you know, just to get the rub from Jericho, man, he was over. There's guys now that wrestle, you know, every week that aren't as over as Ralphus was, right?
We laugh about it. We're sitting here.
It's the truth, though.
The Ralphus training for Big Vito match. Come on, Ralphus. Come on. One push up. All right. You're in shape, Ralphus. You're good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't see that no more. And that was entertaining.
Yeah. It was entertaining. What do you think of guys like Baron Corbin? Are you a fan of his work? He's come a long way from when he first came up. I think he's put a lot of hard work in to try to become a good heel.
I give that guy a lot of credit because when he first started, said, eh.
Yeah.
But there's a guy who put the time in, learned his craft, learned the business, learned how to be a heel. So he's okay. Is he one of my favorite wrestlers? You know, I'm like, but can I sit down and watch and can he be believable? Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, before we wrap it up here, I do want to touch on just a couple things that I really want to know. Like, how was Paulie back in the day when you worked for him? I know towards the end of ECW, things got got pretty chaotic, and Paulie is considered by many to be a genius, right? I have to ask, like, the Paul Heyman you see, it's almost like the Jim Cornette thing. The Paul Heyman you see on TV, is he the same guy behind the scenes?
Paulie. He is a guy who grew up in wrestling, right? He's like Jim Cornette in some circles. Like, he knows the business. He knows the ins and outs. He's passionate about it. Obviously, he knows how to conduct himself because of the position he has. So, but one thing about Paulie, he's a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And he could motivate you to go out there and steal the show. He's a great motivator, a great guy to be around as far as wrestling. He got you involved. Because if the boss is around, you're around. If Vince McMahon could take a garbage can, I could take a garbage can. If Vince can do this, he's the boss. If the boss is doing it, I could do it. Because then he could turn around and tell you, you're a wrestler. I said, I'm a freaking club owner. I said, here you are, and you can't do this, but I can go out there and do this. Never give him the opportunity to say, listen, this is what I want. This is what I want. So if you can do it, I can do it. And that's how you look at things. So as far as being a motivator and being that guy, yes, it's better having a mind in the business. Do we still go back to watch some of the ECW stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Right? You talk about him, and he was running his own thing. He had his own mind. He did his thing. So in my eyes, he was successful because he had his own brand, his own cult following, his own thing. So he was successful. And dollars and cents, was he successful? I don't know. But as far as being successful as the ECW that we remember, 150% yes.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people say he might not have been a great businessman, but like you said, you know, he was a great motivator. He made you drink the Kool-Aid. Like, he will make, you know, he will talk you up and you'll run through a freaking building for Paulie. And that's what most people had to say about him that work with him is, you know, he's almost like Vince McMahon. You could go in the room and you're ready to you have a beef with Vince and you want to talk about your pay, you want to talk about, you know, your creative and all that, and you're ready and you got a game plan. And as soon as you get in there, boom, they just flip the switch on you and you leave the room thinking, oh, all right, things are great. You know what I mean? Like, Paulie was one of those guys where, you know, you could have a gripe with Paulie, but the second you talk to him, he knows how to spin it and he knows how to work you and he knows how to get you, you know, out of the door in a different frame of mind than when you walked in. Paulie was just, you'll never see many guys like him.
Nope.
Ever again.
Never again. Because that's not the wrestling we know today. And there's not many guys who grew up in the wrestling business selling pictures, learning from the backs, hanging around with the greats and being. Guys like that are sitting home, like myself. I sit home. I've been there. I've done it all. Right? Yeah. But I sit home. And I sit here and I call it before it happens. And then I'm talking to you, right? And you're sitting here having a conversation. And you're like, man, he knows that. I know the business inside and out, like the back of my hand. Am I a yes guy? And go, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely not.
Right.
Speak my mind, not in a bad way, but say, God, this is the way we all grew up watching wrestling. I said, why are we deviating from Wrestling 101?
That's true. Now, if you think more current stars would actually go in there and try to have a conversation with Vince McMahon, do you think they would get anywhere with him?
I think at this point, because of all that's going on in the world and everything, you know, when you spread yourself too thin, before it used to be one market.
Right.
So it's easier to go have a conversation. When you're in 50 markets, how many different problems can you have in one day? And then you have all these individuals who want to come and talk to you. Mm-hmm. So that's 50 plus another 100 who are disgusted. So where do you go? I mean, and I'm not speaking in defense of Vince McMahon. I'm saying as a business person or an entrepreneur, when you take on different avenues of business, just like yourself with podcasts, now you do this show. If you had to do 10 shows, could you deal with everybody's nonsense? I have to skip. I have cancel. I can't do this. My baby's crying. The bottles are burning. I have to go change a diaper. I have to go to the pool. I have a mani-pedi appointment. Could you deal with all that? Or are you happy just doing this one show, getting it off the ground, and doing whatever couple little things? Imagine handling all those other things, guys. It's a lot.
That's true.
It's a lot.
And I try to tell a lot of people that bitch about Vince McMahon and the way he handles business now, or you know, with the recent layoffs that he had and all that. But until you're in those shoes running a worldwide multi-billion dollar company like that, you have no idea what that guy goes through.
You know what the best is that when people say, I can write better TV than Vince McMahon, I said, you don't even know how to walk in the front door, right? And you don't even know what it takes. You don't know how long a match is. You don't know nothing about the gorilla position. You don't know about getting people ready. You don't know about timing. You don't know about a time limit. You don't know about a two-minute go home. You don't know how many minutes you have allotted for TV, your commercial break, what you got to do, where you got to cut, how you got to hustle, what match you're going to cut out if you run over. Oh, yeah, I could write TV for Vince McMahon.
Right, yeah. No, I know. You're absolutely right. Nobody knows, man. They think it's just easy to go in there and be like, you know, just booking angles. It's a lot more that goes into that.
That's it.
One more thing about ECW. You had some work you did with New Jack. Obviously, we've seen New Jack on the dark side of the ring, and we've heard the stories over the years. Is there a lot of hype to that character? Was he the same guy that you see on TV?
Guys, everybody says, you know, it's funny. Because
I've met him personally at a meet and greet, and he was absolutely fantastic to me. So I'll throw that out there. But
working with him and being in a company with him, right? We had no problems. You know, I'll give you, for instance, you know, there was a group called the Baldies, okay? And we wrestled with New Jack, Balls, and Axel. And here's four guys put together. And the reason the Baldies got put together was because I went to Paul Lee a few times, and I said, Paul, I'd like to move up on the card, and I think I've worked with everybody. He told me straight up, and this is not the shoot truth, but he said, Vito, I just don't have a spot for you at the top. He said, I know what you could do. You've been wrestling good. Everything's fine. They were happy with my work. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to elevate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they had Angel, they had DeVito, and they had PN News. And I said, all right, we'll make you guys the Baldies. Okay. So, okay, the Baldies. So were we in line to do hardcore? I've done it in Puerto Rico, right? So we all have a meeting. All right, so here we are. As Balls and Axel and New Jack, you know, they bleeders, you know. Angel and DeVito, they were happy to, you know, be able to just, I'll do anything. PN News is a veteran. He says, yeah, you know, I was the only pretty boy in the place. And Vito, you don't have to bleed. You'll be okay. I says, nope. I says, you guys bleed? We all bleed. I didn't like it, but I was part of the group. I gained a lot of respect for that. When we were in the ring, we did our thing. We did business, but we knew how to work together. And when you're in the ECW family, right, you eat together, you sleep together, you fight together.
Right.
I'll give you, for instance, there was a guy, I think we were in the Carolinas. I just told the story the other day. And it was a white kid. and he was, I guess, a little prejudiced of black people. Mm-hmm. See, New Jack goes, I'll have a tryout match with you. Everybody's like, what? Yeah, you? I could wrestle, you know. I could wrestle. So we're all sitting there laughing, right? So, okay. Guy gets in the ring. He starts to try to wrestle with New Jack. So the guy's cut a promo and says, yeah, you effing N-word.
Yep.
We're like, he just didn't say this, right? Wound up into a fight in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. So the kid's fighting him back. Everybody's, and this guy had some friends there from Carolina. So it was Balls and Axel and me was sitting here, right? So get the guy out of the ring. So I'm walking back. I said, why did you say that? It's, you know, you don't say that. So not long before, here comes Jack. Right? I look over and I said, oh, shit. No. Came back, slapped him right in the face, and they're fighting.
Yeah.
And they're fighting, right? So all of a sudden, these guys come in, and here's the ECW guys, and then these guys we didn't know. So there we were, squared off. You know, it was the ECW boys against these guys who came in for a tryout. It was the craziest thing. But, you know, did I call him Jerome. I'm probably the only person who calls him Jerome. And he loves me, right?
Yeah.
I love Vito. That's cool, boy, I tell you. But when you talk about guys who are real, he knows me as real. You know what I mean? Like, when you talk about him, has he done some crazy things? Got it on tape. Can't deny it.
Right.
Is he a good time when you're in the bar? I've been in the bar with him. You know? We have a good time. We have a drink of beer. We laugh, you know? He's the type of guy who just wants to have a good time, drink his Kool-Aid, and go home. Just like, I want to drink my Kool-Aid. I want to go home.
Yeah.
You're not looking for a fight. But when somebody wants to irritate you or do something stupid or say, let's try you, boy, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Right.
Then yeah. I think that's the best way to say it for all the fans out there. If you're there to enjoy the man's company and listen to some stories and have a beer with him or whatever, take it as that. And when you look at, for all the other stuff, did you watch the tapes? Okay. Did somebody go off a scaffold? No. Was there a mistaken identity when, you know, he did something with some guy in a ring? Yeah. Did he do this and do that and do the other thing? Yeah. But that's all in the past. But if you're looking at him now, like you said, you want to do an autograph signing, what do you want to do? You want to sit there and enjoy him, talk to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just like me. Like when people come up to me, hey, Vito, how you doing? And I'm fine, shoot the crap with anybody, right? But as soon as you, like, as soon as you say something, like, I'll give you a, for example, and this happened, and this stuff pissed me off, right? I live on a golf course. I go to the country club and dressed in nice clothes. I have my collared shirt. Now, all the guys there are obviously older than I am. Mm-hmm. So I call them all uncle. Hey, uncles, how you doing? You know, and all the wives are sitting there all giddy. Hi, Vito, how's everything? So, you know, say hello. So this one guy turns around and goes, I ain't your fucking uncle.
Mm. Mm. Really?
Right? And that wrestling was fake because I hung out with Gorgeous George. So you hung out with Gorgeous. Did you ever get in a ring before? Because now you irritated me, insulted me in front of people. And everybody there looked at him and said, why did you just do that? Like, you know. So I said, have you got in a ring before? He goes, no. I said, you ever fight before? Because now, like, you know, I'm getting itchy. So I said, what did you do for a living? I work construction. That ain't too tough. I did that 3 times over. And, you know, that ain't nothing. Well, you know, wrestling, you know, is a bunch of, you know, faking. Really? I said, well, I mean, anytime you want to try something out, there's a whole golf course over here. I'd be more than happy to walk with you.
Right.
So I left my uncles and the wives. I said, guys, I'm going to leave now. I said, I hope to talk to you later. Have a good day. Enjoy the sunshine. I go inside. I talk to my friend who's the manager. And I told her, I says, who was it? Yes, I'm going. Okay, babe. My wife just emailed me, gave me the egg. I have another interview after this. But anyway.
Okay. Gotcha.
So they go over and they said, you know, we want to let that happen again. We'll go talk to him. And all the guys in that circle told him when I left, said, Vito is the nicest guy here. He does events for us. He comes here. He helps out. He says, and you go and insult him like that, we just stay away from him. So he got like shunned for that.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen him since. I don't plan on seeing him. If I do see him, I just say, hey, how you doing? But don't insult somebody. Leave people alone. Yeah. You ever get, if, you know, it's just like everybody else, like Dr. D. David Schultz. You think wrestling's fake? You think wrestling's fake? Let me slap you one time. You think the other one? Bang.
That's right.
Is it still fake?
Yeah.
Now, it's not the society or the time to, but there are guys who are assholes out there, and just guys who are human beings too. So I guess the best way to say it is everybody be kind, be genuine. If you don't like me, hey, that's fine. If you don't like a wrestler, that's fine. But always say hello, how you doing, thank you, and be done with it.
Yep, that's all you got to do. And, you know, like we see with social media nowadays,
everybody
has a voice. They all think they can talk tough behind a keyboard. But would they really say the same thing to Big Vito's face?
Nah.
No, not a chance. Like I
with this face with all the smiles,
right? Yeah,
dimples, I don't understand. No, man.
Who could be mad at you, right? Well, hey, man, I totally appreciate you being here. Where can we find you on social media, and what do you want to plug?
Well, my social media is the Big Vito Brand. If you go on Twitter, it's the Big Vito Brand. Go to you Twitch and Big Vito slash.
Twitch.
Hold on, my wife will say it. Say it from beyond.
The Big Vito Brand.
There you go.
If you don't mind putting it in the thing when you do your editing, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I
will. I don't get in trouble.
Right.
Guys, thank you very much for having me on the show. Rob, you've been a great host. Anytime you want to interview me again, I'd be more than happy to. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much. Hey, everybody out there, peace out. This is the Big Vito Brand. And thank you guys for listening. Thank you for being fans. I greatly and humbly appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Vito. I appreciate that.
RTW Rewind.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this interview with the one and only Big Vito. Man, he is such a funny guy, man. Still Staten Island to the core. To the core. Yeah, he'll never lose that, man. I love that. That's what I love about him and Vince Russo. You can put him anywhere in the country. Never going to lose their roots, man, and their accents. I love it. Had a great time talking with Vito. So many good stories. So much more. We can get into it at a later date. But I had a blast talking to the big guy. Very, very charismatic and entertaining guy, and as nice as can be. So I hope you guys enjoy that. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RadRobGaming. Check me on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central, every 2 p.m. in the afternoon on Sundays. And check out my YouTube gaming page. It is called Rad Rob Gaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPOD. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. We would love if you leave us a like on that page. And you can check out our company website for the Reality Check Podcast Network. It is RCPodNetwork.com. I'll be back here on Saturday for the flagship, breaking down Raw, SmackDown, AEW, and NXT, covering current news and all that, and plus Polyester the Evil Taylor and the Imbecile of the Week. So until then, guys, thanks for listening. I appreciate all your support, and we'll see you right back here Saturday for the flagship. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, only here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.